program, you are about to hear all slap pound fun outs with parody, satire, and comedy. Any reference to Bob, the church, the sub genius, religion, politics, or any other touchy subjects is intended only as humor and should pass no reflection on the high standards of WREK Atlanta, its staff, or that of Georgia Tech.
Good evening. This is a decidedly not dead Doc Ellis speaking to you from the non-space age lush antiquity of Xinguiyang in the northern reaches of Myanmar or Burma to you round-eyed devils. Naturally, I would love to regale you with tales of re-entry daring do, but many of the issues arising from our premature return remain unresolved. It simply would not do at this delicate juncture to antagonize our two most powerful and unpredictable current neighbors. I can, however, offer my sympathies to the Batarudin family, if there is one, and assure all interested parties that when we pick our way back to the West, we will make it our first priority to bring his assassins and their co-conspirators to justice, if that has in fact gone down yet. You know, watching the Earth rush up to meet you at a rate of speed that some overly pessimistic recorded voice is presumably warning you in a foreign language is way too fast or way too steep or some damn detail, this coupled with the Gregorian year, decade, century, and millennia coming to an end, my mind turns reflective. I begin to think of all the might-have-beens and possibilities, paths not taken, and this line of thought invariably arrives at the question of how the hell am I going to destroy this consensus reality and replace it with one of my own creation? Let's not fool ourselves. We are all fascists, striving to inflict our personal reality upon the world. Those who clamor for equality are without power themselves and therefore have nothing to lose. But that's beside the point. I am concerned mostly with the internal fascism of each individual. If I may whip this equine corpse yet again for a second, the brain subjugation of the limbs, organs, and the rest of the body amounts to good old top-down totalitarianism. And if you have any doubts about this, just ask your lungs how they feel about that next cigarette. Incidentally, there are vastly superior nicotine delivery devices on the market now. Anyway, in the spirit of unity and the common good, my muscles, as atrophied as they are, once again remind me that energy spontaneously tends to flow only from being concentrated in one place to becoming diffused and spread out. This is, of course, the second law of thermodynamics, and what it means is that you and I are dying. We are fading away. Oh, sure, we have all sorts of schemes to obstruct the second law and hold on to our energy for as long as possible. And yes, there is plenty of room to play with the spontaneous tendencies clause, because even, or rather especially in science, there must be room for data tweaking and adjudication. As many have pointed out, the single God universe quickly loses steam and peters out due to a lack of tension. Even that wacky Jesus fan club had to acknowledge early on that the model of a one-God universe simply presents too much stasis. That and their boy would wind up getting blamed for everything. So, in their cowardly way, they spontaneously promoted Jehovah's faithful lieutenant to God too, but only on the condition that he divert all of the blame and this is the galling part for me, he'd be elevated only enough to mess with the monkeys, but not the big guy himself. This is the positively pathetic modus operandi of only the most talentless plagiarist. They stripped Zoroastrianism of its central theme, but failed to capture the drive or intensity that the Zoros brought to the game with their undetermined outcome. Although this is just the tension that control systems need to, well, control, the Exians lack the necessary philosophical cojones, and for good reason. Even 2,000 years ago, it looked like the game was being decided in favor of the enemy. No, a one-God universe cannot survive entropy, because that one God finds itself spread incredibly thin, both figuratively and literally. The more it creates, the less it is, and I don't want to hear any of this infinite power crap because there is simply no evidence to support this. So, to encapsulate this tangent, I'll put this crystal clear. When you pray to God, or when you do anything for that matter, you are killing God because you are depleting his finite energy. But, of course, this only applies if you actually believe in this sort of fairy tale. And if you do, you are currently listening to the wrong programming. For the rest of us, we are facing the serious problem of heat death, of our divine Yatensany essences bleeding into a cold, uniform universe. Now, this may just be the herbs of the local medicine woman talking, but while aboard the Stronghold Caligula, we availed ourselves of all of the luxuries associated with pre-1985 technology and spent a good deal of our time, especially towards the end, observing our genetic assets in their natural environment. Even then, as the insulation was wearing thin during the heat of this solar cycle, our thoughts had turned to the second law. The loss of our precious life-giving heat to the vacuum took its deepest toll upon the elements of the no longer secret special assignment nursing staff who were unfortunately unable to make the return trip with us. Around this time, we developed a research protocol concerning energy conservation and energy loss obstruction among Yatensany, known to be 1/1 billionth pure. Freezing and disoriented, we were propelled to new heights of indignant rage. Our numbers broke down like this. Approximately 1/3 of the group fought against heat death by frenetically distracting themselves from it. This was usually accomplished by food, foreign substances, and the complete dispersion of funds as quickly as possible. I attempted a number of criticisms of this group, which we came to call the Dead by 40 demographic, but soon lost interest. So just go ahead and keep on with your keeping on. The other 2/3 of the group behave just like I prefer to see humans acting. They conserve their energy by staying inside, staring at their favorite flashing monitor. Perhaps this would be an opportune time to mention, as I was recently reminded by a hack too lazy to finish his book, that information is not knowledge. Don't get me wrong, as I've said before, I enthusiastically encourage everyone to stay home and stay the hell out of my way. But at the same time, let's not fool ourselves. Of course, the state of slack is the state of maximum energy conservation and maximum obstruction to energy loss. However, it seems that the majority of you read this as sedentary slothfulness, which is incorrect. When one of those damn boxes makes you produce alpha waves, it is sucking you dry. Alpha is for sleep and intoxication, not for being bombarded by propaganda disguised as advertising. Keep drinking. You're ugly. You're stupid. Are these really the messages you want traveling unabated into your all-important hind mind? Slack has nothing to do with stasis. There is energy you bleed and energy you absorb. Slackfulness is the state that allows you to absorb energy. You come away ultimately refreshed in a perfect world, even if this invigoration is preceded by a 40-hour death march on some project or personal obsession. The more slack you get, the more energy you absorb. At this point, I would usually tout the rejuvenating effects of this absorption, but I have never met a Yeti hybrid that wants to live past the 100-year mark. So instead, I will pimp the higher pleasure aspect of this transference. Namely, the more you slackfully absorb energy, the more energy you will able to be absorbed at the later date. I didn't write that. Were our legal department mutants available, they would undoubtedly make me read the following disclaimer. The slackful energy expansion effect may produce an effect not unlike opiate addiction. The more energy you absorb, the more energy you need. There, plain and simple. But for you, the skeletons of the no-doubt neglected inpatients and potted daisies on the outside, I expect something more. I expect you to know how to handle your own medicine, whether it is something as complex as one of the experimental exotic synthetics we used to find every so often in the night drop box, or as simple as breathing your precious non-recycled air. You must know how to medicate yourself, and if you have gotten this far by riding the erratic peaks and valleys of random dosing, then you have earned not only my grudging respect, but my mocking contempt as well. Because, let's face it, your energy is dispersed all over the place. This primitive bamboo super repeater that will no doubt condemn our primitive host to generations of hideous birth defects is way past overheating at this point, so I will skip my final point concerning activation energy. Suffice to say, this is a poor use of energy in a manner regarding just enough energy used in the wrong way to upset the whole system, thereby forcing entropy and heat death and blah, blah, blah. Don't do it. Instead, write to us at P.O. Box 670-541, Marietta, Georgia, 30066-0126. Good luck.
Good evening, gentle listener. This is Doc Ellis of the Lymph Node Institute.
Hey, three rabbis, eight cripples, Jesus Christ, a subgenius, and the entire membership, past and present, of the Trilateral Commission are in a karaoke bar. Five of the cripples are doing an old Commodore's tune, I forget which, when one of the rabbis starts kvetching to his waitress about some problem with the service. Well, the other three cripples start arguing with the rabbis because they think the rabbis are disturbing their friend's performance. This makes the Trilateralists pick up their spoons and tap the intro to YYZ on their glasses in unison. So, Jesus turns to the subgenius and says, "Oh, I thought they were nipples." And the subgenius says, "Well, I guess that explains why this wallet is covered with crap." Our focus of late has been to try to determine the exact intentions of the Parities Unknown, who blacked out our transmission for a full month. And rather sloppily, I might add, if they want to shut us up, why don't they just kill one of us to spook the rest? Anyway, from the models we've assembled, the most likely linking coincidence is the recent effort of U.S. Representative Bob Barr to run the Christians out of the armed forces, under a cover story, of course. His first move was to point out the Army's practice of providing a service for the soldiers who subscribe to the Wicca belief. This is nothing new. This same flap came up some years ago when it was pointed out that one of Anton LaVey's Church of Satan buddies, whose name escapes me, was an officer in Army intelligence at the Presidio in San Francisco. It inflamed the appropriate groups, Christ Lickers, the Soul Pirates, etc., then as it does now. This time, though, some of the predictable control variables are falling into line by urging their robots not to subcontract out to the U.S. Armed Forces. In short, if this continues long enough, this will leave mostly latent subgenii, some Jews, and a scattered bunch of robots whose urges to kill have outweighed their allegiance to their unseen master. This is just fine with us. Of course, as I may have mentioned before, one of our models shows that all the right people, from our perspective, may be running organized religions, or ORs as we call them. If this is the case, it might be the pinks who have their souls peddled off, and we might finally be able to get some real work done around here. Two men are walking through the desert, all rock and no water, I'm told. One says to the other, "Who is this third who walks beside you?" The other responds, "Oh, that's just my gigantic penis." The two men walk on in silence. In other words, human behavior is a question of scale. For instance, if you ask someone, doesn't matter if it's male or female, to fillet you for $1, you will probably not find many takers. Those who would fillet you for $1 would probably fillet you for free anyway, so that's not a very good indicator. At $10, then, you will find a few more takers, mostly due to the phenomenon of crack addiction depressing prostitution prices. At three figures, we're still pretty much in the sex industry professional zone here. But four figures, $1,000, here we enter an interesting area indeed. Now we see the first blip of the non-professional on the radar. The next leap we make is the middle of the curve. As we rise to five figures, there's a pretty good chance you're going to get shined by somebody. Six figures, and you've pretty much swallowed the entire demographic, or vice versa. There are a few freaks who will hold out for seven or eight or maybe even nine, but it's pretty much a matter of greed at this point. A traveling salesman is driving through a rural area between stops when his car breaks down just as night is falling. The only sign of humanity for miles is an old farmhouse. The salesman wearily lugs his briefcase to the front door and knocks. The door
door is answered by an old farmer who eyes the salesman suspiciously. The salesman explains his situation, and the farmer warms to him, telling him that the only garage in the area is already closed, but he's welcome to stay the night. Upon entering the small house, the man is bombarded by the smell of delicious food. The farmer mentions that they are about to eat and tells the salesman to have a seat at the table. Assuming that the farmer lives with his old wife, he is flabbergasted when dinner is brought in by the farmer's three beautiful daughters, all dressed like Daisy Duke. They eat in silence, the salesman eyeing the daughters as they get up every few minutes and return with another course of the scrumptious meal. After everyone is stuffed, the farmer pulls out his pipe and, lighting it, asks the salesman just exactly what it is he sells. The salesman leans forward with a wolfish grin on his face.
"Well, I'm glad you asked that," he says. "I am selling that which is your birthright, but which you deny yourself. And I'd love to give you all a sample."
"Well, that I have to see," says the farmer as he leans forward. The salesman opens his briefcase, whips out a pistol, and shoots the farmer. His daughter's dead before they know what's happening. Thumbing the bulge in his pants, the salesman eyes the three fresh, nubile corpses and says,
"And now, my darlings, we shall all taste of the sour fruit of true love."
And promptly drops dead from the poison in this food. The embers of tobacco in the farmer's pipe ignite the carpet on fire, which soon catches to the rest of the house, and the five of them all return to the elements together. We are an organization, as of the second I commit this sound wave to Rust, devoted to one primary principle. Do not ask for help, because no one can help you. You are completely on your own from the moment you're born. Tiny glop of protein, carbon, and piss water Milky Way. Dissatisfied? Good. You should be. You should be dissatisfied with everything around you, because it is not of you. That goes double for other people. Your world is damaged because you are damaged, and vice versus the rest. It is impossible to travel in a straight line on a curved surface. Therefore, we pedal solitary solidarity. It's not okay. I'm not okay. And you sure as hell are not okay. What exactly do you think you are? Some special case? Some Uberman or woman or whatever? You are the same thing as everyone else. A means to an end. A footstep in the inexorable crawl from the ocean to... Well, you tell me. No, better yet, let's all tell each other. Your cargo, for our purposes, let's think of it as a friendly little squirrel helix, is perishable, equal parts imperative and worthless. The helix has a way of taking care of itself, buddy. Another drop in the ocean, by that I mean you, is alternately imperative and worthless. On one hand, it changes the entire velocity of the moment. On the other hand, who cares? You cannot miss something that you have never known. So why not just sit and die? Rock on, tie off, drop dead. The least you can do is milk yourself in service to the local sperm bank. Well, there is one reason not to self-combust that may apply to some of you. That some, but not all of you, who are extremely contrary people. If someone, parent, cop, boss, whoever, tells you to do something, you are immediately compelled to do the opposite. Well, this figures quite neatly into the control reflex equation, but that's old news to be covered again in the future, no doubt. But let me suggest this. As you may or may not have noticed, there is a war of extermination going on right now against you. And if you are anything like me, this makes you want to survive out of sheer spite. Not just exist, but prosper. Expand like a cold in their chest. Squirt forward to Armageddon. How many times do I have to say this? Well, at least I'm not bothering you on the street wearing plaque boards and trying to push some illegible literature into your hand. Well, at least not yet. Two astronauts are spacewalking, trying to fix a damaged satellite. At a particularly crucial time, one of the astronauts rips a tremendous fart and steams up his visor. The non-gaseous astronaut is at a loss, the mission now in serious jeopardy. He radios back to the shuttle and asks advice. The
mission commander tells him to wait while they radio to mission control for advice. The two astronauts wait and wait, the flatulent astronaut gagging on the smell of his own recycled fart now pukes into his spacesuit. Just as the well astronaut is about to give up and take the sick astronaut back to the ship, he sees a small form floating towards him. As it gets closer, he realizes that it is a chimp in a spacesuit. Drifting to them, the chimp goes first to the sick astronaut, examining him through the visor, and then to the satellite they are supposed to be working on, all the while digging in a bag on his back. The well astronaut is ecstatic. Not only is this chimp going to help my friend, he's going to fix the satellite too, he thinks to himself. Instead, the chimp grabs their tools, stuffs them in its bag, and rockets away into space. Just then, the astronaut's radio squawks to life. This is Mission Control. For best results, please contact the Lymph Node Institute at www.lymphnodeinstitute.com or P.O. Box 670-541, Marietta, Georgia 30066-0126. The astronaut responds, "Never mind, they were already here." On behalf of that same Lymph Node Institute, this is Doc Ellis wishing you good night and good luck.
Good morning, patients. This is your fully certified Dr. P. Ellis. As much as I would like to regale you with harrowing tales of boardroom strife, I simply don't have time for it. Suffice to say that there's been a profound misunderstanding between the staff of the Institute, who you know and love, you know, the pill people, and certain forces that were retained to perform subcontracted functions. Some people, you give them an inch, then you pound in the other 11 inches when they don't expect it. The look in the eyes is damn tasty. You give them an office with a window and they think they run the place. Well, rest assured that no matter what happens to the structure of the board, UN patients will continue to receive the same high quality of therapy that you've come to expect from the Lymph Node Institute. I know this is just the sort of thing that keeps you people in rapt attention, so to the point here. For the first time that I can remember, there's actually been a consensus of sort among the patient population here, at least in the question box. Most of you who bothered to scribble down what passes for your thoughts have requested a brief overview of the theory of simple therapeutic machines. I know I've covered this before, but it's always convenient to have the information in one place, especially when I can't keep track of what exactly I've let you remember. So, as you may or may not remember from Conspiracy High School, there are six different simple machines. The lever, the pulley, the wedge, the wheel and axle, the inclined plane, and the screw. LNI has adapted each of these basic methods of load manipulation into viable therapeutic paradigms. The level, well, we've already explained that in some detail. I suggest you not mess with it or ask too many questions. The pulley method is often encouraged but seldom used. It has the unique distinction of being the only mode of therapy that is potentially self-controlled in that it is possible to administer your own therapy. The proverbial bootstraps theory of psychic medicine. There are, of course, drawbacks to this. The daring patient that shoulders its own burden enters a state of absolute rigidity, having to constantly exert its energy to keep its pulleys tight. Once the effort is made, the would-be self-medicator is stuck in an ever-tightening vice. The only escape is slow and steady release, which is, of course, agonizing. Any of you out there who've had to live with rotted teeth for an extended period of time might recognize the sensation. Patients reluctant to experience the adverse stimuli will, little by little, exert more and more effort until, inevitably, they reach their maximum effort. This will result in system failure. But we have an answer for everything around here. The best remedy for pulley therapy is usually wedge therapy, since, in most cases, in order for the patient to get out, the doctor has to get in. The wedge method is one that I'm sure you're all aware of, as it is a staple of our therapeutic method. The wedge itself is usually a pharmaceutical foot in the door, followed by the slow, inevitable force of therapy, pounding into your mind, driving the scales of your emotional armor apart, so that we might take a look, under the hood, as it were. The only drawback, if you can call it that, is that the effects of the wedge tend to be rather permanent. I suppose, in theory, hypothetically, that if a therapy session were to go awry and the cargo was not delivered properly, then when the drugs wore off, the patient would most likely die. But of course, this is pure conjecture. Nothing like this has ever happened, is happening, or will ever happen. And were this unlikely scenario to come to pass, it would not be the fault of the therapy or the therapist, but rather the patient. Some of the human wreckage that drifts into the doors of our humble sanctuary are so profoundly damaged that all we can do is shake our heads, put them down, and harvest their organs. Next, the wheel and axle is a very advanced, simple therapeutic machine, and one that I don't much care for. Not due to its difficulty, oh, no. I'm all for earning style points while tinkering around with a diseased psyche. For me, the limitation is the roundabout manner in which the therapy is carried out. In this method, the therapy progresses in circles, touching all points except the point of interest, which is manipulated indirectly by manipulation of the entire system. I call it a crapshoot. If done correctly, the patient doesn't even know the cargo has been delivered. But for all practical purposes, this is useless to us in our present scenario, the captive audience. It's these sort of non-evasive approaches that have screwed most of you up in the first place. I'm not saying that this method is altogether useless, though. It has its uses. Mostly for non-patients who are being problematic, store owners demanding payment for goods, cops who are too observant, to name a few examples. The main drawback, in my thinking, is that this is one of those machines, like the pulley, that needs constant effort, constant therapy, sunshine for the flowers, cream for the kittens, goddamn stupid cripples! Frankly, I don't have the patience for it. If a patient is that far gone, it makes much more sense to just go ahead and shatter the existing personality map and replace it with one from the LNI catalog. For some of you, this might explain the ridiculously high number of incidents of nymphomania among the nursing staff. Again, without constant effort, the whole system spontaneously unravels and the patient's psyche is smashed. Long terrible death, a la the hypothetical wage mishap. Hey, eggs and omelets here. Eggs and omelets. The inclined plane is a deceptively simple therapeutic machine. A little stick-and-carrot-style behavior modification gets it out of its cave, a little more, and we've made what appears to be progress. Well, unlike the wheel and axle or the pulley, the inclined plane doesn't need constant effort, but it wants constant effort, which is, in a way, worse. Removing all therapeutic effort once the patient has advanced up the plane is actually harmless enough. Any slippage that may occur will be geologically slow. But it is impossible to explain this to the patient, which feels insecure, off balance, etc. Many patients suffering through IP withdrawal believe that without the constant therapeutic effort, they'll die. Unfortunately, as opposed to the wheel and axle and the pulley, it does not. No, that would be too easy on the rest of us. Instead, these half-breeds lurch out into the general population looking for a surrogate therapist. Usually this is a pimp or a chicken hawk, but hey, everyone gets what they need. It's a win-win situation. Eggs and omelets, people. Eggs and omelets. Anyway, all of this is why I prefer to use the inclined plane exclusively as a method of torture. All that grunting and pissing. Oh yeah, of interest to the more durable stock with an air shot, rapid ascent and descent through stages of this therapy can be one hell of a buzz. Which brings us to the screw. The screw is a special case indeed. Its effect is permanent at the discretion of the therapist, and, most significantly, it is the most subtle of all the machines discussed this morning, in that it can deliver the cargo little by little, without the patient ever being aware, with zero risk to patient integrity and to the therapy itself. Day after day, tweak after tweak, inch by inch, until you hit bottom. Oh, but I've said too much already. Anyway, you'll learn all about the screw when I'm good and ready to show you. So, until next time, I hope this has bundled any loose ends and settled all outstanding bets. And oh yeah, a friendly reminder. Tampering with your own or any other patient's medication is punishable by separation. Don't try to keep secrets from your doctor or your pals. And a lot of you talk in your sleep. Listeners, this is Dr. P. Ellis. Ah, yes, my fellow doctors and I are all very excited this time of year. The atmosphere is almost too much to stand. Of course, global warming has taken the nip out of the air, but hey, it's not like it's Pearl Harbor Day. The seers swirl their divining bowls. The wizards journey out of their castles and into the land to consolidate their holds on the feeble-minded peasants. The vampires battle among themselves for the choicest booty, and the zombies shamble out of their graves and into the voting booths. Yes, it's gambling season! There's always so much more room around here in November. Desks, microscopes, computers, microphones, daisies, all replaced by IOUs and pawn tickets. And this November, even more so. Our models show a better than 50-50 probability that this fake election will have more contests decided by 10,000 votes or less than we have ever been able to wager on before. And that is good gambling. Handicaps, point spreads, out the window. To bore you for a minute with some of the clinical details of the data that dictates this prediction, in our observation of what are historically extremely conservative areas, the advertising being shiny, bumpy, stickery crap is way down, through the floor. Also, the dissemination of information through unorthodox channels, read unpollable, unpredictable, may sway the traditional voting ratio of 3 conservatives for every 2 other people. Ah, but they do still have their crude but effective methods, which they will, of course, attempt to use to skew the whole situation to their advantage again.
The sad truth of the matter is that most of you deserve to be ruled by cruel overlords. You think you're bored, but you're actually stupid. How do we know this? Because only an idiot could get bored while engaged in a struggle for survival. It suggests that you are not paying attention. Boredom, or its hip cousin apathy, are both classic characteristics of the slave mentality. But sitting in our ivory tower, it's easy to forget that the mechanism of the machine is about as much interest to you as physics is to a hammer-struck thumb. The discerning Daisy, which we hope you are, cares nothing for the whys and wherefores of research, preferring instead the huns and whatnows of practical application. And the new, friendlier tact that control is determined will prolong our lives dictates that we dispense more with the hey-hey and less of the you there. So, rather than get mired in the boring physical details of what exactly happens and why, a course of explanation that would disassemble each of the conspiracy's weapons against you and make you relatively invulnerable, it's been decided that I will discuss only the traps themselves, what they are, and how to generally, if possible, steer clear. Well, not really. The good goodies will, once again, be held back. After all, now that the score has been pushed back, we have to, once again, become a profit-making organization. The prototype of the single appliance that all of our information machines are gradually melding into, that is being heralded as the next evolutionary plateau, is the dispenser of the Khan's opiates. Pinks don't evolve. If they did, we wouldn't have these breeding problems. You, my buttercups, are the insensate rats manically bumping the magic button for more. I call them opiates, but their placating effects are secondary. They're actually traps to snare your thoughts. The incidental calming effect is the natural result of the decay and fatigue of the captured mind. They will almost certainly not depart from their proven winners, the Chinese finger trap. It simply creates a false dichotomy. Choices A and B both lead to the same end, which is the beginning, having to choose between A and B. Yeah, we could set you in a corner and let you tug away forever. All of the patients we've tested this on have died, although I must confess that once it gets that idiotic look on its face, the desire to intervene becomes, well, less than intense. Of course, the key to escaping the trap is to get the other fingers involved, but if, as part of the definitions inherent in the trap, the natural homo sap impulses of creativity ingenuity are blocked, well, hold your meat and pass the vegetable. This method, therefore, involves constant repetition, confirmation that only A or B response is possible. An even simpler system is the mousetrap. You very simply induce the desire for a goodie, but punish the act of trying to fulfill that desire. This is old hat to the so-called organized religions and has therefore permeated the behavior patterns of most of the homo saps. It's the basic mechanism of bad TV sitcoms that usually contain a conservative morality play. As a matter of fact, you might say that we live in a giant mousetrap. This is also the number one tool in the eradication of the useless eaters, as it works to increase crime and literally punish poverty. Until you have people killing each other over sports jackets and shoes. It's about as precise as trying to shoot a flea with a shotgun, though. Slightly less precise is the old Roach Motel ambush, primarily used in advertising. The prey is led through what appears to be familiar terrain until it reaches the point of no return. At this point, the singular access is blocked and it's trapped forever. This is not sophisticated or smart, but it works almost every time. It is so highly effective for reinforcing certain bad habits. And don't confuse this with irony. It's about as ironic as drinking your own urine. And last but not least, the efficient and far-reaching mine. This is the backbone armament of the offensive against you. Please keep in mind how patient they are. Mines are planted behind you, and they bide their time a little more, and then boop! They run you back the way you came, right into the minefield, which somehow you're never quite prepared for. Our amateur competitors, the Hubbardites, are obsessed with this one. They believe in painstakingly digging up each individual mind, carefully testing it, probing it, always mindful, always reverent of the fact that it's easier to plant them than to dig them up. We believe in paving over the minefield with a 23-lane superhighway to the Palace of Slack, complete with rest stops of excess. It's the only way, really. There's no digging up this crap without severe casualties, which we simply can't afford. Of course, the Hubbardites, with their literally endless parade of zombies, have all the manpower they need. But for an operation of our size, it just isn't feasible, especially after the advent of the modern ones. Not the simple death-spraying frisbees, but the new models programmed for even more patience. No, not you. I mean, Sputnik, Checkers. Not the old clunky types that just indiscriminately blow everything away, but the new ones that only go off when you step off of them, giving you the option of staying frozen in place for as long as you can stand it. And this, colleagues, is why we must push the Muawm, a new invention that they cannot survive. The White Stone, the White Muawm microchip amalgamation of information appliances. Why, just imagine a future in which you can drive down the road without having to weave and dodge between the depressed idiots who drive 10 miles an hour under the limit while avoiding the manic megalomaniacs who drive as if they don't believe that they can die. Imagine driving into the city and walking down the deserted street without getting jostled by jittery jackanapes. Perhaps in a moment of forgetfulness, you will wonder where everyone is. But as you pass the VR parlor and its slack-jawed, drooling zombies stacked like a cord of wood in one of those cheap Japanese hotels, you'll remember. And you'll also remember that they're not pulling the wool over their own eyes. There won't be wanton Yeti squirt frenzy programs in there. Just sterile, stale crap that will devalue an already cheap life instead of enhancing it. Even if it is with gaudy baubles and dancing lights. And it is here that the grasp might be relaxed. With, oh, 3/4 of the population totally sedated, it would leave just us and the Khan without all of their cannon fodder milling around on the playing field. But it's all part of their short-sightedness. Their traps may work to our advantage, but you have to wager and you have to play, or you're just another speed bump between the Lymph Node Institute and the inexorable destiny of the triumph of the Yeti way of life. Good evening.
Play in the jungle, robot work in the factory, they will have a giant rumble, monkey versus robot. Gotcha, you fucking sheep.
This is Dr. Ellis coming to you from an extremely calm and smoothly functioning lymph node institute. Why would I mention that, you ask? And you did ask. I heard you. Why should it be otherwise, huh? Why should operations grind to a halt just because our most organized doctor refuses to leave his damn monkeys and come down out of space? After all, it is our duty. No, no. It is our pleasure to offer you a rational alternative to the ticking stool sample laying on your doorstep. Admittedly, it has been a long time since I spoke at you. Where am I? Where am I? You don't ask me where I am. I ask where I put you in your pot, you damn daisy. But since you ask, I have finally discovered time control. And I mean applied time control. This removes me from the shackles of your fumble-fi-feces-chucking monkey time. I am free from your animal appetites for sleep and nourishment. I am now more efficient than ever. I assume I don't really have much of a memory. But that will not hinder me as long as the nicotine inhalers in the meds room hold out.
Yeah, it's a whole room now.
I will be as a god among amoebas. Anyway, I've grown so very tired of myself, and there seems little reason for my input lately with everything going so smoothly. I mean, how could this rotten basket come to fruition any better? What I'm getting at is, with the third quarter reports behind me, I've been doing a little experimenting in the field of juvenile research, my first academic love and the subject of my thesis. Ah, but enough about me. Let's talk about you, because this is a great time to be alive. Come on! Almost every kid between 12 and 17 thinks that he or she is a natural-born killer. No, sorry. The natural-born killer. Oh, and here's a little tip for the new geeks. Now that every fashion queen has that thousand-yard stare, just because some glob of human clay thinks that it's indestructible doesn't make it so, or even original for that matter. You will find more comfort if you adopt the perspective of, how should I say this, the hunter. Hunting. Believe me, if you're thinking in these terms, there's nothing threatening about that posturing meat. Never confuse vacancy with intensity. Jesus, one of our legal jackals is scratching on the glass, so I guess I should say something like, this method works even better if you never, and I mean never, mention my damn name to anyone. More? Make that, never actually manifest that perspective in anyone else's objective reality. Even though that makes very little sense. Listen, by this point, I trust you to sort through it for yourselves. We found out long ago that when you connect the wrong patient with the wrong therapy, the patient doesn't really bother that many people before its experiment concludes. If you're wondering, then, it's the mall. I know I've gone on about this before, but it's not just the sugar-enhanced subliminals to go get you soma dis or dat. It is more basic than that. This is what they fail to get. And if you need for me to define they, then just head on down the dial. It's always more simple than that. This is the basic truth that their lopsided expert minds cannot grasp. It is so basic that I will meet my objective if I can hammer this point home to a mere 10% of you. Well, that is if the audience is around 1 billion people. Always have to cook the books, you know, it's the way of the world. As I have said time and again, but which bears repeating, we will triumph because they do not know what they are doing. They think they are doing anything they can to chase the short-term buck, which is true enough. But they are doing, oh, so much more than that. We have our pupas imprinting upon an information device that tells them, nothing of substance. Apologists like to point out that this is no different than an imprint upon, say, a stuffed animal.
Say it!
As usual, this is wrong. A stuffed animal is a blank slate. The child imbues it with its personality. With the dynamic media, it is the other way around. As I said, it's not the sugar-enhanced subliminals. It is the very fact of imprinting upon a dynamic, inanimate object. Nah, the hell with them. The ship will be on the bottom of the ocean before they ever get their commission. All right. Nice talk. Let's get it together for the big finish. What I'm trying to do here is to allude to the aforementioned third quarter report. Yeah, the kids come by it honest. In between all of the stuffy data, there are a few nuggets that seem to indicate that a certain segment of the flock is slowly but surely moving their copious amounts of excess cash from paper securities to gold. Yeah, I see the reasoning here, and it is wrong. Once the odometer rolls over and nothing changes, the big boys will cash back in first, which will leave the sheep flocked, fleeced, and chafed. Still dumbass to the end, that's good to know. Since gold will be as useless as stock certificates anyway. You want a currency? Try back issues of Hustler. Damn it, I have been shown the future, and it is bulldozers. Have I not said that enough? And you think you're tired? This is pointless. Your demographic is shot. Good luck. You'll need it.
If you would like more information on the Church of the Subgenius, you could write to them at
P.O. Box 181-417, Cleveland Heights, Ohio, 44118-1417, or visit them online
at
subgenius.com.
Ten soldiers and Nixon's coming.
Good morning, patients. This is Dr. P. Ellis of the Lymph Node Institute again.
And then the numbers were thrown in front of me. They spend a lot of time and money trying to profit from educated guesses about which way the members of the herd will dart next. Keep one step ahead of your pursuers. These brains are well past the point of usefulness and are starting to short out and under the deluge of information. I'll say this for you. You know your pressure points. As happens with every fanatic, my eyes are growing dim. And assassins don't fire straight if they're thinking too much about heaven. In all honesty, it's getting difficult to tell one bundle of energy from the other, or organized information from noise. Don't get me wrong. I've always been in this for the long haul. Just when I think I might be done, the hate comes roaring back like sweet cold fire. Some random affront resets the machine, and it begins feeding again. And I remember the listeners and the patients. I remember that they must be destroyed. They must be destroyed. That they must be destroyed. Feeding again. That they must be destroyed. Sleek-headed men, Caesar. Hell, I'll repeat myself. Hell, I'll repeat myself. Self-programming machine that eats information. See, the mind seeks to divert its attention. It's a self-programming machine that eats information. And if you think you were better off as some sort of Sasquatch guard, hey, you, buy this. Of course, with your more developed personal relationships, all people with which they have developed. I doubt any of you would let someone borrow your own fist. Oh, but don't listen to me.
Good evening, everyone. This is Dr. P. Ellis. Throughout the last few months, I've been a part of an interdepartmental team which was commissioned to diagnose and dissect the fiasco that was XJ. All areas of failure were addressed and analyzed through a variety of methods, from remote viewing to torture, but I'll spare you the details. All bets stay on the table until the game is over. You know, there are so many of those, but on with the business at hand. For the sake of reference, for those of you at home, there is a high-range certainty that the sun will rise tomorrow.
So, next comes the plan. Where does the plan? Secretary Charmantan is fully recovering from his orbital insertion mishap, and as I understand, recently wore a suit of pink cat on the game show. There's no problem with our ears. We have money. No fault can be found outside of the Nuclear Institute. When did we deviate from privacy models? Cycle 6:58 a.m. Better than you must, but not on my logic. To the point, then. Another unresolved question. Imagine that. So what's next for us, you might be whining? The usual. Recruit. And disinter Trinity Lauren and use her to fertilize the orange orchard provided by that helpful professor at FSU. There is an Aristotelian similarity between the size, consistency, and in this case, effect of the matter in question. Yeah, it was all a joke. Go back to sleep. Good night.